This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, hello, everybody. It is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio, and it's kind of interesting to hear from me on a Saturday, plus we had a show yesterday. It's summertime, so sometimes schedules aren't exactly every Thursday for when I can talk to fabulous authors, but this week we have two amazing ones. Yesterday we talked to Terry Wilson, and today we're talking to Daniela Petrova. She grew up behind the Iron Curtain in Sofia, Bulgaria. She came to the U.S. in her early 20s and earned a B.A. in philosophy from Columbia University and a master's in counseling for mental health and wellness from New York University. She is a recipient of the Artist Fellowship in Writing from Massachusetts Cultural Council. Her poems, stories, and essays have appeared in many publications, including The New York Times, The Washington Post, Salon, and Marie Claire. Her first novel, Her Daughter's Mother, is coming this month on the 18th. She lives and writes in New York City, and you can find all of her social media links as well as her website in the write-up of the show. Welcome, Danielle. How are you?
Hi, Patricia. I'm great. Super excited to join you today.
So tell me a little bit about growing up in Bulgaria. What was reading kind of your – I talk to a lot of authors that talk about how they were reading all the time. Were you one of those kids too? Because, in the U.S. we always have this mindset of living behind the Iron Curtain. And tell me what your – what your experiences were regarding reading when you grew up there.
So I grew up in a poor working class family. Nobody in my family had graduated from high school, but they all loved to read. Yes, my grandparents actually had to quit middle grade school, I guess, when they had to help their family support their other siblings. But my grandfather loved education, and so because I was doing so well in school, he was very encouraging. And I didn't have many toys. I remember only two dolls. But I had a lot of books, and the neighborhood library was, just a few blocks away, and I could get as many books as I wanted. So I started reading very early on, and that's what I loved most. So lots of reading. And, you know, there wasn't much television or anything like that growing up. So most of my family, we would just gather in the kitchen. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment, and there was no central heating, so only the kitchen was warm in the winters. And we would all just sit around and read books or newspapers. We lived with my grandparents, my uncle, so a big family, but everyone read. So, yeah, I loved books since I was very little.
What were your favorites growing up?
So let me think. A lot of favorites, but I have to say Martin Eden by Jack London was the first book I read. I stayed up all night to read. It was recommended to me by one of my teachers who loved my writing and thought I absolutely should read that book, and he was right. I so related to the writer protagonist in the book, who was also very poor, growing up in a working class family, not very educated. And he, becomes a writer with a lot of hard, after a lot of hard work. So I very much related to that book. I loved a lot of the Russian writers. War and Peace was one of my favorites. As a teenager, I remember reading it for days and not leaving the house. I even had to turn down a date. My boyfriend wasn't happy at all about it. But, let's see. Dostoevsky, Crime and Punishment was one of my favorites. Of course, Jane Austen. I would say later on, as I was getting older, like 18, 19, I read all of Hemingway.
I mean, it's amazing to me how no matter where anybody is from, there's these classic books that we can all tie into, the words and the stories and how it speaks to us. So it's always very cool to hear each author's journey through reading. I think it really speaks volumes of how those words and those stories, how important they are.
Absolutely. I mean, storytelling, you know, everywhere, it doesn't matter of the language, we all relate and respond to the same stories, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So you finished high school, equivalent mm-hmm. what we call high school here in the United States.
Right.
And you go to, do you apply in high school to come to the United States, or is there a time frame you have to graduate first? What is the process for you to have come from Bulgaria to here?
So I actually enrolled at the university in Sofia, and I came to the States because I got married. I met in Sofia, I met an American from Bulgarian origin. He had defected Bulgaria during communism with his mother. He was just a child. He was back in Sofia visiting his grandmother when I met him. And we had, a long-distance relationship for 2 years where only he could come visit me because I needed a visa to come to the States. So after two years, he proposed, and I said yes, and I dropped everything, including, I dropped out of the university in my third year. My family wasn't happy about it at all, but, I was young and naive, and love trumped everything. So here I was. I packed everything and moved to the States. I thought what's the big deal? I'll continue my education in the States. But I came here and realized that education here was very expensive. My husband at the time, we got divorced eventually. But back then, he worked as a super in a building, a luxury building here in New York. And I had hard time finding a job even as a cleaning lady without any references, without any experience. So we weren't going to save any money, to go to college. And it was a huge cultural shock for me. I mean, I had never seen a credit card. I didn't know what the check was. I had never seen a computer. So it was a huge shock for me. And it took a lot of time to get myself on track, and eventually I went back to college and then graduate school. But it took a lot of time to get there, and the help of a lot of people. So many people have been helpful to me, guiding me, where to go, what to do, so that I can get back to school.
It's interesting, too, I think that it seems like no matter where you go and where you live, there's always people willing to help, people achieve and grow. And I think that's a commonality as well, the storytelling and then, of course, kindness. And that's, I'm so glad you found those resources. I feel that I did the same thing, to get through school. And it was a lot. It wasn't an easy road. It was a lot of work, like you're talking about. But having those people guiding you and saying, go here, take this class, you can do this, and this will facilitate. It helps immensely.
Oh, so much! I'm so grateful.
Yes. So you finished. You get your graduate degree, and you're writing for. Mm-hmm. How did you transition into being a journalist?
So I have always loved writing. I started writing back as a kid in Bulgaria. I wrote my first poem in third grade, and so I have always been writing, but, you know, it wasn't practical to pursue writing in Bulgaria. I needed a profession. My family was worried that without a profession, I will end up working like them in a factory on a conveyor line. So I pursued architecture in Bulgaria. It was also very creative, but I missed books. And eventually when I came to the States, I barely spoke English, and so I started taking classes, English as a second language, before going to college, and I studied philosophy in college because I knew that my English wasn't up to par to, you know, to study creative writing, although I still took a few creative writing classes, and now I'm amazed when I think about it. I mean, I could barely string words into sentences, you know, grammatically correct sentences, but I was already writing again. And so I've been writing throughout my entire life, and it wasn't always practical to pursue it, and definitely not in the States in the beginning. That's why I studied philosophy undergrad. I studied psychology in graduate school. But I have always been writing, and I have always been taking classes on the side, going to writing conferences, summer writing workshops. And so I slowly started writing and publishing personal essays. Then I started doing articles here and there, and writing short stories. So it was kind of gradual, little by little.
Sure. And I you bring about a very good point. I had a teacher years ago who always loved to write. She was one of my journalism teachers, and she said there was a time that, you know, she had little kids, and life was just not there for her to sit down and write a book or write whatever. But every day she wrote something. So she wrote in her journal, she wrote, you know, her thoughts, or she wrote a letter to someone, but she wrote, and she said it just kept building. So that, like you're saying, you miss the storytelling, you miss the writing. And so if you can just do a little bit every day or a few times a week, go to the conferences, talk to writers, be in a writer's group, you know, it builds. It absolutely builds. So that's a beautiful point to make.
Thank you, yes.
So I wanted to talk to you now we're to you going to write a book, the book that's coming out on the 18th, so this next week. So tell me what was the catalyst from you to move from short essays, poems, to writing a book?
So I've always loved fiction and wanted to write a novel. I wrote another novel before this one, which didn't go anywhere, but I do not regret it at all because I learned so much working on it. And so when I had the idea for this one, Her Daughter's Mother, I felt prepared. I felt like I knew what I was doing. But in terms of the catalyst for this particular story, I had gone through infertility with my ex-husband. We tried almost everything to get pregnant, including a donor egg. And it was unsuccessful, but out of it came, out of it, the premise for this book was born.
Okay. And so were you just taking notes as you went along, you know, like we're talking about journaling, or was it something that you started at that point for the idea and then worked from there?
Yes, I started at that point. I mean, I've lived through this experience for so many years. I didn't rely on any journaling or any notes from the past. It had become so much part of who I am. I knew so much about what it is like to go through infertility. that I just used my personal experience to write this novel.
So why go with a thriller versus, say, women's fiction or a comedy or romantic comedy, like, to, you know, not necessarily making light of it, but why, you know, why do a thriller theme versus any other?
So it is a domestic suspense or psychological thriller. It's a quiet thriller. It's
okay.
More like a crossover with women's fiction because it's emotional. I was very much worried about making sure that while it is a page-turner, it is fast-paced. I wanted to focus on the characters and their experiences emotionally, what they go through. So I very much rely on that. Maybe I should tell a little bit about what the novel is about. It's,
that would be great.
Yeah, it's about a 38-year-old woman who, after years of struggling with fertility, infertility, finally gets pregnant using donor egg. She ends up meeting the young woman, her donor, which is totally against the rules in anonymous donor cycles. But anyway, they do meet and become fast friends. But then when the donor vanishes without a trace, and the pregnant woman becomes a prime suspect in the investigation. She starts digging on her own into the donor's past, trying to find out what happened. And as the story unfolds, she's overwhelmed by the secrets she uncovers. And by the end of the novel, everything she thought she knew about those she loves has been appended.
Wow.
So, I wanted to tell this story from the point of view of the two women, the woman who is pregnant, the woman whose genes the baby inherits, and also the father. So I have three narrators who narrate the story. It's a first-person point of view. And I did that because I very much wanted to show how grueling and emotionally devastating going through this process is. But also it brings up a lot of issues of insecurity, questions of identity. And to answer your questions in question in terms of the suspense, the mystery, I felt that this story lends itself to mystery very well, because going through infertility is very much a process where every month you're dealing with the mystery of, are you going to get pregnant or not? And every month you're facing the same question. And I thought this is a very, this type of genre would be perfect for that type of story, a story of infertility, a story where one woman has to use the eggs of a younger woman about whom she doesn't know anything. And so trying to find out, you know, it's very much like a mystery. So that was my thinking.
And you're right. I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster when anyone's going through fertility treatments. Every month, like you're saying, it's those things of, will I get pregnant this month? And I remember for a while we were discussing, you know, we had two children, and we had a couple of miscarriages, and the thought of, okay, well, will it be this month? And initially I think I looked at it with excitement, and then after a while it was almost exhausting. You know, is this going to happen at this month? And we never did get pregnant again. But it's, and then we went the route of adoption. But it's that, you know, it's exhausting. No matter how you do it, it's every month is it going to happen, and it's reliving it. So I think, you know, you've picked the perfect category for this because you're right, the mystery of it. Will it happen? We don't know. And then the way you've layered in the characters and the stress and the companionship, you've done a beautiful job with your story.
Thank you.
And I know that a lot of people, this is your second language to write so beautifully in. Did you get the opportunity when it's for foreign rights and translation? Are you going to write it in Bulgarian?
No, I have a translator. Actually, I'm about to look over some of the translation after our phone call. So, yes, I think it's such a different skill. I don't know if I would be able to do it. I haven't written in Bulgarian in so long. I mean, I've been here for 24 years have been, you know, thinking, writing, communicating in English. So I think the language has also changed. Languages are evolving constantly. I wouldn't dare even try to translate. Yeah.
And you've gotten some beautiful reviews. What has been your favorite review so far? Let me qualify. From whom has been your favorite review so far?
Oh, God, that is such a hard question. I don't know. I haven't focused on that. What I can say is that I love the reviews that mention the emotional depth of the story. Because, as I said, it's not one of those hardcore thrillers. You know, it's not gory. It's not, you're not terrified. So it's more quiet, focuses on people's emotions. And so the reviews that have highlighted that, I have really appreciated. I don't think I can pick one.
Well, you've had some beautiful ones for sure. Some events coming up. And you've got some events coming up. So on Wednesday, you'll be at your book launch in New York with Allison Camerota, the CNN anchor and author of Amanda Wakes Up. Is this a, like you answer questions from her and then from the audience, and then do you do a reading? What is the format for that event?
Yes, so the book launch is on Wednesday. And, yes, I guess I'll be in conversation with Camerota, and we will, I guess the format will be, we'll talk about my book. I might do a brief reading, maybe a passage, and then we'll take questions from the audience. This is perhaps an interesting tidbit, but I will be in conversation with Allison Camerota because actually she was the leader of my Resolve support group. When I was going through infertility, I joined a support group, and she was our leader. So we have a long history there, and it would be wonderful to talk to her about my novel.
Oh, you know, I love that. I love how women find ways to lift each other up and help each other. And I mean, that's wonderful. That is, I can't wait to see your post for that on Instagram or Twitter, and looking forward to seeing those. Those will be wonderful. So you've got this book going, starting being released this month. Our week. What is next for you? What is your next project?
I'm working on my next novel. It's also based on my experience. This time, my experience as an immigrant coming to the States after growing up behind the Iron Curtain. And It will be about a young woman who finds herself a virtual prisoner to her husband in the middle of Manhattan.
Okay.
I guess, yeah, it's also a domestic suspense, and yeah, I'm very excited about it.
And when is your anticipated completion for that one?
Oh, God, I don't know. I hope that I will write it faster than her daughter's mother. I'm hoping that I've learned so much now that I will not need to do as many rewrites, but we shall see. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have a deadline, so I don't know.
I think the second book, I'm writing book 10, and the second book I think was the hardest because your first book, nobody knows you exist, literally, and, you know, for your books itself, for your author world. But then the first book comes out, and if people really like it, they're saying, where's your next one? And I think that the pressure to write the second book is a little bit more intense, but you're right. You do learn a lot getting that first book in, knowing your mistakes, knowing the words you use all the time and overuse. And then, of course, the process of editing and picking a book cover or filling out the form to tell the book cover artist what your book's about and all the different things. Your timing, I think, is better. So, but, yeah, it's a good problem to have for people to want your next book right away.
Absolutely. You're right. The pressure is different. It's one thing to be writing and nobody knows you're working on a novel. And if it takes you 10 years, it takes you 10 years. With the second novel, absolutely, there is this pressure. But like you said, I hope it will, I hope I will be faster having learned from my mistakes. So we'll see.
And the beauty of writing is we learn from some mistakes, we make new ones, and we keep adjusting. And I think that authors that definitely have staying power that are willing to learn and listen. So you are also going to be in Connecticut and L.A. and Washington, D.C. and Rhode Island, all these places you're going to stop and talk about your book. You're going to be busy next month for the next month.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about talking to people about my debut book and hope it will be a wonderful experience.
So have you, for your book release is Wednesday, and we have about 2 minutes left, but that's from your reviewers. Have you gotten feedback from just the readers, like in NetGalley, have you gotten that feedback as well? And what has that been like?
Yes, I've been getting a lot of feedback on Goodreads. I haven't checked NetGalley, but it has been very positive, and I have been overwhelmed to see readers connecting and responding to my characters and their journey. So that has been incredibly rewarding.
Well, I wish you all the success, and I look forward to talking with you again when you have your next books out. And, of course, you're welcome on the show anytime. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much, Patricia. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This has been Readers Entertainment Radio with Patricia W. Fisher. We've been talking to Daniela Petrova, her book, Her Daughter's Mother, is coming out on Wednesday, June 18th. She is also available, or you can reach her at her website, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All of those links are in the right above the show. Go get that book and keep reading, everybody.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.